Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Earlier this year, we were inspired by the peaceful protests that broke out across Libya. This basic and joyful longing for human freedom echoed the voices that we had heard all across the region.
I'm not afraid of anybody. This is a tough game. You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
It is Michael Savage, August 22nd, 2011, the end of August at the Hotel Savage. I am the last man standing and broadcasting. Everyone else is in Sardinia. No, it's a sad day for me in a way because no one's listening to the news. I mean, Obama has overthrown Gaddafi, and now what? He talks about it as though this is a good thing. He's overthrown Gaddafi. Are you listening to me out there? Who do you think is more dangerous, Gaddafi or those who will replace him? And on top of it all, why is Obama saying that we were inspired by the peaceful protests that broke out across Libya when he's not inspired by the peaceful protests of the Tea Party here in America? Instead, he castigates the actual American taxpayer. After all, you know that the Tea Party is composed of taxpayers, not tax takers. Taxpayers are not in the Tea Party. Tax takers are not in the Tea Party. Taxpayers are in the Tea Party. Did you know that the top 5% of taxpayers paid almost 60% of all federal income taxes in 2008? I'll repeat that for those of you who are in the tax-taking business. The top 5% of taxpayers paid 58.7% of all federal income taxes in 2008. And yet, Obama wants to take away the money of the top earners. He wants to take away every dollar of every taxpayer if he can. Now, of course, he wouldn't do that, but that's his goal. He would love to do that. You know that, and I know that. That's the protocols of Leninism, which is to tax the kulaks. And if the kulaks refuse to turn over their farms, what you do is you put the kulaks in the archipelagos, the gulag archipelagos of Obama's manifestation of the Federal Homeland Security Act. So the fact of the matter is, if they took every dollar, let's take everyone earning over $1 million and take every dollar that they earn and give it to the U.S. government. You know, it would only take away 2% of the national debt. That's how far in the hole we are. Do you have any idea the trouble we're in? And without cutting on spending, without reducing spending, we're finished as a nation. And of course, go tell that to Obama, who needed like a 20-car motorcade to go visit the CEO of Comcast, which owns NBC and MSNBC. Can anyone on this listening to this show? Now, I don't know. We looked it up. I couldn't get an answer, so I want to be fair to the president. I don't know that it's appropriate for Obama to be meeting with the CEO of Comcast, which owns NBC and MSNBC and God knows what other properties in the media, right? However, can you name any other president who met with the head of a major media company? That's all I'm asking you. We couldn't find any reference to it because beware the government media complex and all of that. My horoscope is very odd. It says Aries. A parting of the ways looks increasingly likely, and if you're smart, you won't try to stop it. There is a natural cycle to everything in life, including relationships, so accept that change is supposed to happen. Don't fight it. That is frightening. I have no idea what they're talking about. A parting of the ways looks likely, and if you're smart, you won't stop it. Natural cycle. I don't know. You know, I'm in a very strange, because I want to go away with the family tomorrow. They're all flying to Europe to go on a friend's boat. And they're going to go from Italy to Sardinia to this and that. And I'm not going because of the bum tooth. B, I hate traveling. C, I don't want to. I can't take Teddy to the, because he's liable to be banned in Sardinia. The thing is I cannot take Teddy with me. Cannot take him to Europe because he would be probably seized by the Brits and used for target practice by the liberal Brits. Probably be thrown into a cage with English pit bulls in order to show how liberal they are. 1-800-449-825. So Obama has quoted the overthrow of Gaddafi as a great thing. He says the people were inspired. We were inspired by the peaceful protests that broke out across Libya. Were you inspired? Can you play the beginning of clip one again? I don't remember being inspired.
Earlier this Please. Year, we were inspired by the peaceful protests that broke out across Libya.
Now let's stop. What does he mean, we were inspired? You mean him and his mother-in-law and his personal assistant? What do you mean we were inspired? I don't know anyone who was inspired by the peaceful protests that broke out across Libya. Was it him and Reggie Love? Was it him and Michelle? Was it him and his mother-in-law? Was it him and his mother-in-law, Susan Rice, and Soros? Was it him and Soros and Brzezinski? Was it him and Soros, Brzezinski, and Jimmy Carter? Who was it when he says the imperial we were inspired by the peaceful protests? I wasn't inspired. I was terrified because I knew that what was coming was exactly what's happening, Sharia law. So they're not fooling me. I know what's behind all of this Arab Spring garbage, and I've known it from the beginning. No, sorry, Bob, you can't fool old Mike. You can fool some of the hosts some of the time. You can fool some of the hosts all of the time. But you can't fool this host any of the time. Did I get your attention yet? This is the Savage Nation. This is the Savage Nation. And the world is falling apart. The man has destroyed the world, wrecked the economy, wrecked the peace of the... Look, I mean, the world was already in trouble. The man has wrecked everything. Wherever there was peace, he made war. Wherever there should have been war, he made peace. Instead of going to war against Syria, instead of going to war against the Iranian mullahs, he goes to war against a little tin pot dictator like Gaddafi. And it took all of this time to get him out. And now what's waiting? Listen to who he says now. We recognize the TNZ as the legitimate governing authority in Libya. I don't even know who he's talking about. I thought that was an entertainment website. What is he? They will play the last part of clip two where he says, the United States and our European friends. I didn't know we have any friends. Do you have any friends in Europe? I'm not allowed to go to Europe. What do you mean friends in Europe? Where's your friend? Some deviant in Brussels is my friend? What friend? Tony Blair is my friend? The United States and our European friends, he says, recognize the TNZ as the legitimate governing authority in Libya. I don't know what he's talking about. Isn't there a website, TNZ, for entertainment where they show women undressing? What is that website, Beowulf? TMZ? TMZ, right. And then there's something with jaws. If your jaws get locked up, a temporal mandible, TMZ. That's a dental thing. And then Larry David would have to be quiet for the rest of his existence. 1-800-449-8255. Can you remember any other president meeting with the head of a major media company? Who else do you think Obama's meeting with at Martha's Vineyard? We learned today, over the weekend rather, the government gave $1.2 trillion to Wall Street. Jamie Dimon, probably his name was Diamond, changes to Dimon to do well on Wall Street. Lloyd Blankfein hasn't changed his name yet to Blank. Lloyd Blank, Jamie Dimon. $1.2 trillion? And it took a Freedom of Information Act and a lawsuit by Bloomberg News to get the names of the companies he gave the money to. I think Ben Bernanke, orange jumpsuit. I think the Secretary of the Treasury, a matching jumpsuit. I've never seen anything like this. Now, wait a minute. Okay, let's not jump to conclusions. If you read the entire article, which I posted for you to actually read, the government, it said, gave $1.2 trillion to save these investment banks. Okay? Now they claim they got all their money back plus interest. Now, if they lied about who they gave the money to begin with, you know, like in a lawsuit, if a defense attorney finds that the person testifying lied once, they can undermine their credibility because they say if they lied once, they'll lie. When did they stop lying, right? So, in other words, the same government that lied and said they didn't give anyone anything or wouldn't tell us who they gave it to until they were sued in court to tell us who they gave it to is now saying they got all their money back. Do you actually believe a word of that? I'm not ready for the first break. I'm warming up. I feel myself. I need to warm up. It's a weird time of the year here. I should normally be. Everyone I know is on vacation till August 31st. Everyone's closed, out of business. I got a novel coming out, Abuse of Power. Oh, yeah, I have a little interesting contest for you starting today. I'm starting it early in order to make sure that your listening interest is maintained in the doldrums of August. I need reviews of Abuse of Power. It's a fiction. I realize that conservatives don't read fiction. I realize we're knuckle draggers. Only liberals read literature. We're not allowed to even read it, never alone write it. So because we conservatives are not allowed to write or read fiction, that's reserved only for the geniuses on the left. I'm going to ask you if you would be willing to write a review of Abuse of Power, which we're going to post on michaelsavage.com if it meets our standards. The question to win a free book in order to review it is this, okay? What fiction have you read which would qualify you to even review this book? Or if you don't read it all, what thriller movie have you recently seen that is in the same genre, let's say, of Michael Savage's Abuse of Power? It's a contest I'm going to run from now for a few weeks because I really think that although we on the right, you know, are not allowed to write fiction or read fiction because we're not smart enough, only liberals can write fiction because, after all, they're all literate. You understand that. The poorer they are and the more angry they are about America and its racism and homophobia, the more intelligent they are. So if you drive around in an expensive car, for example, they hate you. Automatically, they assume you're a Nazi and a Republican, usually a Nazi first and a Republican second, or a Republican and a Nazi. And if you have a license plate that says support the police on it, they're sure that you belong to some SS organization with a secret handshake. And they're the ones who are natural fiction writers because, you see, in order to read fiction or write fiction, you have to be at least a pothead for 12 years. On top of that, it would be good if you've been in rehab at least 4 or 5 times and possibly addicted as well to harder drugs than marijuana. Then you would be qualified to be a fiction reader and a fiction writer. But let's say some right-wing nut who goes to a church, is married to the same woman for more than 10 years, and has children, let's say, and even worse, you're a Boy Scout leader, or you were a Boy Scout. You absolutely, I don't even think you should be allowed to buy fiction in a bookstore, according to liberals. You talk about what do they have, a thing that they were going to pass, the fairness doctrine to prevent me from talking on the radio? I think they should pass a fairness doctrine to prevent conservatives from writing books, well, fiction for sure. We should be allowed to write our Mein Kampf type of books, because that's all they are, after all. They're nowhere near as good as the liberal books, even though we sell like crazy. But I don't think we should be permitted to write fiction because we debase the English language. The fact of the matter is I may have a PhD and 2 master's degrees, and admittedly I wrote 25 books, but that should not permit me to write fiction or read it even. I think we should be barred from entering bookstores and buy fiction. In fact, I think that if this was a legitimate government that wanted to preserve the culture, at least the world, the international culture that is emerging, bookstores should be forced to screen readers as to their party affiliation. And anyone who hasn't voted for Obama should be barred from buying a novel or any fiction whatsoever. Because in order to create an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So Obama's overthrown Gaddafi, and he says this is good for humanity, and I'm not so sure. And he says the government of Libya is now the TNC, which to me is about as legitimate as TMJ, temporal mandibular joint disorder. And so from now on, who's the TNC? George Soros and Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter? What do you mean TNC? Who are these people? They've already said that Sharia law should be the basis of all of the law in Libya. How could that be good for anybody on earth? I mean, cutting off hands is a good thing? Is that it? Liberals now believe in cutting off hands. Transitional National Council. Who is that? Who's the Transitional National Council? Okay, let me take a caller on this because Fred in Sacramento likes the overthrow of Gaddafi. Tell us why, Fred.
Yeah, well, I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East, and one thing I can tell you for sure, Gaddafi was overthrown by us and Europe because he sponsored state terrorism, and that's why we're going against Assad, because Assad assassinated that popular leader in Lebanon who was a Muslim. I forget his name, but we're going after Gaddafi because he blew up the Lockerbie plane. And
wait a minute. He blew up the Lockerbie plane how many years ago? 20 years ago? 10 years ago? We didn't go after him because let's slow down. Let's assume that what you're saying is true, which I don't believe, by the way. I believe there are other reasons for going after Gaddafi. How do you know that the TNC, whoever they are going to be more U.S. friendly than Gaddafi was?
Well, here's the thing. We have no evidence, but we've been supporting them, and I sort of believe
wait,
that...
Wait, did you just say that did I hear you say we have no evidence we've been supporting the rebels in Libya?
I have no evidence of they haven't disclosed it in the state-supported media.
Well, excuse me, sir. Whose airplanes were being used to bomb Gaddafi's forces?
Oh, American planes. Yeah, we've been...
So therefore, we have supported the, quote, rebels. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. But we still don't know who they are. Like, are they pro-Western or are they...
Well, I just said that. So why are we taking a chance? See, this goes to the whole core of Obama's absurdity. You mean you overthrow a guy like Gaddafi because they may be more friendly to us? Did it make sense to overthrow Mubarak, in your opinion?
Yes, because he was a thief. I worked in Egypt. He was a thief,
I see. And the Muslim Brotherhood and the gangs running around Egypt right now are not thieves.
I think anything would be an improvement on Mubarak. He was establishing a dynasty for him and his son.
Anything would be an improvement, even though we have been at peace with Egypt. Egypt's been at peace with Israel for, what, 20 years now, and now rockets are raining in with the support of Egyptian security. That's a good thing for the world?
No, that was a kickback to us for giving him billions and billions and billions of dollars. Anything is...
Wait, I missed that. What's a kickback? What is? You mean the Egyptian... Hold it. Fred, hold it. I really want to hear your thinking. You're saying that Egypt joining the terrorists who are raining rockets on Israel, trying to provoke another war, is a good thing?
I'm happy that he's gone. And I hope that court executes him and prime time TV.
You're not hearing me. I just asked you a question. Irrespective of you're happy he's gone, do you think it's a mark of stability that Egypt has now joined those in the Gaza Strip in raining rockets on Israel? Don't you think that that creates instability in the world?
Well, it certainly does, but we don't know if that's a policy or if that's just a temporary condition until they establish a good leader.
I see. So a few Jews here, a few Jews there. It doesn't matter. The rockets may rain down, but that's okay. The Jews can take care of themselves. I see. So it sounds like you worked for Jimmy Carter at some point in your life as well, because that's the kind of lame brain leftist thinking of, let's take a chance. Let's take a chance on terrorists. They might be our friend tomorrow. That's great.
Savage.
Ta jsem potkal hned ten den večer. Říkal, že byl na plovárně a že tě tam viděl.
Povídal, come in, USA. USA, come in.
Díval se přitom přes nás.
USA, come in. Come in, USA.
Stejně. Rozumíš, měl v té chvíli...
This is Pavel Savage at the Hotel Ozone.
On mi
no, it's a joke I pull every August whenever no one's listening to the show except you. I have fun late August because everyone's away. Station managers are away. Group managers are away. No one's listening. Everyone's in Sardinia having sardines. Everybody's traveling but me. Because I don't... But no, truthfully, so this is a joke. I say the end of August at the Hotel Ozone, right? That was a cult underground film in 1967 that I actually have a copy of. In the end of August at the Hotel Ozone, 1967, it was a Czech production. And it was done by Pavel Jurasek, one of the leading lights of the Czech New Wave of the 60s, who was probably long forgotten, right? And listen to this. It was a bleak portrait of a post-apocalyptic world. After simultaneous nuclear attacks by the East and West wipe out the lion's share of the Earth's population, a band of eight women in their mid-20s to early 30s, wow, and they're all Czech, led by an elderly female military officer, played by Hillary Clinton, wander the landscape of Eastern Europe searching for food, supplies, and other survivors. In time, the Czech women discover a dilapidated hotel that has become home for a lonely old man who guards a few tattered remnants of the former civilization, a television that no longer works, an old newspaper, and a wind-up phonograph. Starkly photographed in black and white, the end of August at the Hotel Ozone marked the second collaboration between Jurasek and director John Schmidt. So that's why I like the movie, because I want to be the man that the Czech women find in the hotel with the TV that no longer works. Can you think a band of Czech women in their 20s, led by an elderly female military officer, as played by, God forbid it was played by Hillary Clinton. I could think of a worse person playing the elderly female military officer, whatever the former Secretary of State pins, whatever her name is. And then discovered the dilapidated hotel has become home for lonely old men of gods, a few tattered remnants of former civilization. Television no longer works, an old newspaper, no one in phone. How about a radio? They should have an old radio that doesn't work. But even though he's an old man, because they are Czech and they're in their mid-20s to early 30s, I mean, he's going to have the time of his life. It doesn't matter that it's post-apocalyptic. I mean, a girl has to do what a girl has to do. You know what I'm saying? It's the end of the world anyway. And since God's no longer looking, he's working around on another planet. What's the difference what they do with the old man? That's why I like the movie in my own way. Anyway, to get serious for a minute, Transnational National Council is now running Libya, and that's a good thing according to Mr. President. But the question is, who are they? They've already said that Sharia law, should be the foundation of the new constitution of Libya. Why should we be celebrating that? Then I've asked you another question. I need reviewers for my new novel coming out in a few weeks called Abuse of Power. And it's a heck of a read. I mean, I had a friend read it who's very intelligent and doesn't read novels at all. He said he couldn't put it down. He kept sending me emails. He said, I could not put it down. He said, how'd you write it? Blah, blah, blah. So I'm asking you, the listener, what's your qualification to write a review of Abuse of Power? What fiction have you recently read? What thriller movie have you recently seen? And if you could answer that question, I'll send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. Bingo. Let's start in Houston, Texas. John in Houston, go ahead, please. Tell me your reading background, please.
Dr. Savage, I read 2 to 4 novels a month. I've read everything from James Michener to Stephen King and everything in between. I like fiction. It's a good way to get away from the world, basically.
That's interesting. You read 2 to 4 novels a week.
No,
I'm sorry. So about 1 a week, in other words.
That's correct.
That's pretty amazing. And you're an otherwise busy person, correct? You don't watch. I assume you don't watch TV.
I watch some TV, but most of it I watch recorded.
I see. So would you like to review Abuse of Power? Because I'll send you a copy. You're the perfect person to do it.
I would love to review it.
Okay, you got it. Stay on the line. We'll take your email. And my loyal staff of Beowulf and Doug and I forget the – I'm so like – Charles, I'm sorry I forgot your name. Oh, God, I'm really – what's going on with my memory today? I didn't have enough tea. I need to drink my Godfrey. I need to have a Godfrey. That's, you know, something that's very funny, to change the word of things, like change a verb into something else, change a verb into a noun. Like, I want my Godfrey. I can have a cup of Godfrey. That's a funny line that you would see in fiction written by Anthony Burgess, who wrote one amazing novels like A Clockwork Orange. I mean, I used to love reading Burgess. I myself don't read much fiction. I swear to God, I don't. I'm a movie fanatic. And this is something I must admit to you in advance. My mind has always been pictographic. That's why I'm good on the radio. In other words, when I speak with you and you're listening to me, you actually see images. Now, that's true with any language. Language is imagery. But I am more so pictographic than most people in the media. I just have an innate ability to speak in images, okay? So that's why many of you who like to read or watch movies like the radio show that I do, because I speak to you in images, right? So the novel that I wrote, it's my first published novel. I've written fiction since I'm 16 years old, all unpublished. Most of it was maudlin crap. You know, the woe is me kind of stuff that people sit and write in cafes today. Mainly girls who don't have a boyfriend. They want to be found in a cafe by some guy who takes pity on them, sitting there scribbling in a cafe with tattoos on their brain. They may not have any ink on their body, but their brains are all inked up. You know what I'm saying? Their brains are inked up with despair. And they want some guy to notice them, and they're scribbling in a journal. They don't look at anyone. They get mad at you for sitting in the restaurant or cafe as though you're not supposed to be there. My thought on that always has been, excuse me, if my conversation is disturbing your journal writing or your fiction writing, then why don't you write at home? What are you doing here? It's a public place. So I tend to get louder at that point until they leave, because I'm not – why do they look at you like you're making a problem for them in a restaurant or cafe when they're writing? It's to be – it's called a poseur, folks. That was a famous phrase in the Bohemian circles of the 20s, long before I was born. They were known as poseurs, P-O-S-E-U-R-S, which are people who are faking it. And America is now filled with an entire pseudo-intellectual class of poseurs of all stripes, okay? Never, not alone just writer poseurs. You name it. From the Real Housewives of, what do you think they are? They're poseurs. They're not real housewives. A real housewife wouldn't have a TV show. You got to be a lunatic. That's what the fake Real Housewife of New York, because he was coming on like he was a hot, and she was going to out him. I mean, look, I read everything, you know. I It's terrible when you're in the business. You wind up reading everything. You never stop. I'm always digging, researching. People like my family saying, why are you reading that garbage? Why do you read popular this? Why do you read articles like media articles, entertainment articles? Because everything's interesting to me. It's not just highbrow. I like lowbrow stuff too. It's like occasionally, I mean, I like tuna fish sandwiches as well as decent dining. I hate fine dining. I'm not like into really fine dining. I can't stand. That's like so poseur and pseudo. I cannot take it. I can't eat in a restaurant like that. My glottis locks up. The minute a guy prances over and tells me the menu, and if the menu is over a certain size, I leave the restaurant. I know I'm being ripped off. The larger the menu, the worse the food. That's a new. Is that true? Could that parable work? The larger the size of the menu. I don't mean the number of items, because I know good restaurants now, but I mean the size, the carte de fare. If it's overly large, it reminds me of old Italian bills like lira. I remember when I first went to Europe when I was young, I was shocked at how graphic the Italian people are. Like a 1,000 lira note at the time was like the size of our regular bill. A 10,000 lira note was bigger. It had more paper. And a 100,000 lira note had even more paper, was made of more paper. I said, that makes more sense because it's all worthless. But at least you know it's more because it's bigger. And I think it's not too long until Obama starts making different size paper currency in America. In that, I mean, how else is he going to tell you that it has any value? What is paper money? It's based upon what? Richard Nixon's grave, who buried the gold standard? You know what I'm saying? Mr. Republican. He was a Republican like my dog is a Republican. All you got to know is that, okay, all you got to know about Dick Nixon is that I was really naive at the time of his presidency. I was very young. I didn't know very much. But I remember writing in my journal, as I was disturbed by people in cafes who were disturbing me because they were talking while I was writing in my journal, as I was a young poseur at the time. During Nixon's era, when I was simply writing in journals with my dark eyes and my, you know, pen focused on my, I remember it was a brocaded Chinese covered journal. I was really into like my journals. They'd bring a lot on eBay. I have a whole carton filled with this dreck. You know, today I did this and did that and my heart is broken and blah, blah, blah. How can the world be so blah, 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 you know. Instead of going out and buying real estate in Manhattan, I was writing in journal. What can you do? All right. So anyway, if I had only bought a tenement at that time in Manhattan, in Harlem, you can imagine? If I had only done a business deal with Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton at that time. But then at that time, I think Al Sharpton didn't have his divinity degree yet. He wasn't 10. We looked into that, by the way. Remember, why are you calling him Reverend Sharpton? For years, I've been asking, what do you mean reverend? And they talk to him like he's really a reverend. Reverend Sharpton. I mean, I'm a real PhD from a great university, and they castigate me, those vermin in the media. But this dirtbag, this degenerate fraud, do I have to say Tawana Brawley and Detective Pagonis again? This complete fraud has a divinity degree from a storefront church in New York City given to him when he was 10 years old. And that qualifies Fox News to refer to him as Reverend Sharpton. I'm not jealous of them. I'm just sick of the vermin in the media. I'm sick of them and their false pretenses. How am I in the media if I have so much trouble with people in the media? I don't really understand that. We are talking about the news in a strange way. I mean, the Hotel Ozone was a little bit of a reach. The president is at Martha's Vineyard praising the end of the regime in Libya and saying that the new government is something we should revere or deal with. Who are these people? Why did we overthrow Gaddafi, who was admittedly a bad character? But to me, the rebels look like they're worse. And the reason I say that is because I saw what happened in Egypt. The only person who could be celebrating this is Anderson Cooper, because the men had tight dungarees and they looked like they visited Berkeley once. So he must have been on the side of the rebels. You know, it's the same crap. It's the age of the Black Panthers. Media was on their side. Cop killers, media's on their side. Anyone who says they're a rebel, the vermin in the media right away, they're on their side. Because rebel means good. Except in America, where a rebel who was a Tea Party member, who are the rebels of today, they're no good. The actual American rebel is in the U.S. Tea Party movement, right? Think about it. Who's the rebel? The liberals? They're not rebels. They're the status quo. Have you gotten the picture yet? The whole set and frame has changed, but they don't even know that they are the status quo. They are their own enemy now. The liberal movement became the status quo. They run the country. They run the world. So they're now the establishment. The rebels are me. I'm the rebel. And I'm a rebel with a cause, not without a cause.
But the rebels in America are the Tea Party. They're the only rebels on earth that the vermin in the media don't like. Go figure. I figured it out a long time ago. And the answer is liberalism is a mental disorder. Not only is their hair purple, but their brains are purple. I may have a tuxedo on my soul, but they have a bum's outfit on their soul. I can guarantee you that. So why are you qualified to review abuse of power, I asked. Please, if you have TMJ, do not call the show because I don't want to hear someone, I don't want to hear the jawbones cracking with temporal mandibular joint disorder. That was big a couple of years ago where you got off from work with the finger that didn't work from computers. You got unemployment insurance and disability for years and sued the owner of the company. What was that racket with the, everyone walked around with a wrist thing? What was that disease called, Beowulf, where the wrist? Does anyone know that? Todd had that in the 1980s. Who wanted to collect a check, carpal tunnel syndrome, until I tell you, I studied it, and you won't believe this, but vitamin B6 actually reduced the symptoms of carpal tunnel syndrome. I think that eventually seeped out, and that died out as a claim. The only, I don't know what claims they use today. I think they use, you know, if only they would actually put it into the DSM, liberalism, as a mental disorder. Can you imagine how many people would claim disability based on that one? The entire base of Obama wouldn't have to worry about a living. If the psychiatrist were to claim liberalism as a mental disorder and put it into DSM manual, whichever is the current one, they can immediately get SSI, SDSI. They can get the crazy checks sent to home, even to Sardinia on vacation, wherever they may be. I keep saying Sardinia because the family's going to head out that way and I'm not going. I never had a desire to go to Sardinia. I know it's a hot spot because the Aga Khan and the water's clean, but I never met a Sardinian I liked. I don't know Sardinians. Is that really where sardines are plentiful, schools of sardines? Because to be honest with you, I live in San Francisco. The bay is full of sardines. What do I need to go to Sardinia for sardines for, I ask myself. Or if I really want sardines, I go to a supermarket and get them with or without oil, in tomato sauce or plain oil. I mean, what's the point of going anywhere? What am I going to get, sun and a beach? And I'm going to see a Euro Corv walking around with a bathing suit, with everything hanging out? I can go to L.A. for that. I go to Sunset Boulevard for that. I go to Miami Beach for that. I go to nowhere for that. I can turn on the TV for that. There's no reason to travel anywhere on earth anymore. There is. And I learned it when I was 18. The old man told the young man on the ship as he traveled to Europe and didn't want to hang out with the guys. And he went down into the bunk where the old 80-year-old who was blind, the old Dutchman, and the young man said to him, "Old man, what is the meaning of life?" And the old man said to the young man, "The meaning of life is," he looked up from his bunk to the young man, "The meaning of life," said the man with a quaky voice. "Well, I don't know, young man, but I know you're born holding it and you die holding it." I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm not afraid of anybody. This is a tough game. You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
See, that's the kind of civility we would expect from Maxine Waters. And actually, people get shocked by it. I'm not. See, this is good because people actually see the face that supports Obama. Now we actually see the hatred and the low-class nature of the Obama base. And that's as exemplified by the esteemed Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Democrat from California, I suppose. So we're talking about this and that in a Savage Nation. No more rape charges against the Frenchie, the frisky Frenchman. I told you that from day one, from the get-go. Look, you got to understand the whole thing on Strauss-Kahn. I'll repeat it to you again in 60 seconds, just so you understand that I can goof around a little and then, you know, float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. Thank you, Cassius. Why was DSK set up to begin with? How did they use the dirt bag to do it? Well, she did it for the money. She didn't know she was, they pulled they pulled her string to bring him down because A, they knew his weakness. They knew that if she went and asked for consensual sex, he'd go for it. And then he probably wouldn't pay because he's French or whatever. And then they could nail him for a fake rape charge. And here's the end. He was set up to become the next president of France. So it's pretty clear that Sarkozy was behind it and or the World Bank, because not only did they engineer him out of the World Bank, but they put a woman in who's a protege of Obama. You don't know that whole subtext. It's in a book I'm writing for next spring But this woman, Christine Lagarde, I remember her name now. Amazing, my memory work. Christine Lagarde, I think. She came from Chicago, France, Chicago. She came from a major bank in Chicago, and they put her into the World Bank just before the debate over the debt limit. And she chimed in and said, raise the debt limit to save the world. This was all done to knock out DSK, put her into the World Bank so she'd come out and chime in and say, Obama needs you to raise the debt limit. Didn't you see how this is done? That's how the game is played. They destroy people. In the third world, they just kill you. Here, they destroy your reputation. Either they ban you in England or they set you up on a false rape charge. Okay? We haven't yet reached the point of Syria where the government uses tanks and machine guns to silence the opposition. God forbid we should ever go to that level. But I wouldn't put anything past anything happening in this country. When you have degenerate dirtbags like you have now in the Democrat Party of the lowest order, demonic, they want race war, they want hatred, they want open warfare in this country, anything could happen. It's terrifying to watch this. So let me get away from politics because I get very agitated when I see how evil the Democrat Party has become. Joseph in Houston, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's wonderful to talk to you. I'm a Muslim conservative, a very, very proud Muslim conservative, actually. And I feel as though that not only I'm qualified to review your book because I'm a Muslim, but because I'm a very, very avid reader despite my somewhat young age. While other kids in my age group are going to clubs or going out and getting drunk, I'm actually at home reading or...
Wow. So you want to review Abuse of Power. You're going to get a copy, so stay in the line. Joseph, I'd love to speak with you. I got 15 seconds. Could you call back in the next hour? Because I have never had a Muslim caller who has identified himself in the parameters that you've just laid out, by the way. Joseph, please call. Get Joseph's number and call him back, unless it's in Guantanamo. If it's in Guantanamo, don't call him back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listening to the last days of freedom of speech in America. I mean, if you actually saw it in the context in which this is occurring, you would realize how precious this really is. What I am doing and what others do in talk radio is almost unheard of in human history. That's number one. And number two, will soon be disappeared by the banking powers of the world who understand that we're on to them and with their political factotums, their puppets. And they do not want us to continue. Now, it's true I was selected for abuse, and I was targeted by the establishment. It started in England, but they didn't go further with it and pick on others yet, nor did they, complete the smear campaign. But believe me, this is in the wings. President Obama is celebrating the overthrow of Gaddafi and telling us that we should celebrate the arrival of this group called the TNZ as a legitimate governing authority. We don't know who the TNZ is, but we know already they've announced that the known as Sharia law, is going to be the basis for law in Libya. Now, how could anyone be celebrating this? Are you crazy? And then you got Congresswoman so-called Maxine Waters
so-called Democrat of so-called California. Well, listen to her in clip five.
I'm not afraid of anybody. This is a tough game. You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
So in other words, this mad woman is now saying the taxpayers of America can go straight to hell. Her constituency are the welfare recipients, etc. That's her constituency. She's trying to stir up a war between the haves and have-nots. Let's put it to you that way. And she's saying the Tea Party. And the Tea Party are basically the taxpayers of America who've had enough of big government and enough of big spending and enough of the grandiosity of the and Obama administration. And she's saying we can all go to hell. It's amazing to me that we have to listen to this. By the way, I want to say hello to my good friend Bruce Houston in Washington, D.C., who is the new owner of WTNT 730 on the dial. It's a great station, and you can always hear my show live in the heart of the monster on the East Coast from 6 to 9 p.m. weekdays on WTNT 730 on the dial. It's a great station, and I am actually in the nation's capital, believe it or not, which means that politicians, while they're driving around in their bulletproof limousines, going either from constituents to donors, doing the public good, will occasionally listen to the show as they're recovering from a speech, and so it's good to be in the heart of the monster. So the world is falling apart, the economy is in free fall, and Obama is giving his missives from wherever he is. I forget the island already. Martha's Vineyard. Even Martha fled the vineyard. Once all of the money traders arrived, she left the vineyard. She bought a condominium in Platteville, New York. She ran away from the vineyard. Martha's Vineyard. Oh, yeah. It's like people who live in Boca Raton. You know, it's like supposed to be high class. You know, take a look at Boca Raton. It's like federal witness protection highway, man. I mean, it's Boca Raton, rat's mouth. Remember people say, I live in Boca Raton, really. You know, the Rangers Boca Raton, like, from $25 million houses on the ocean to very inexpensive condominiums. And there's nothing wrong with being poor, but just because you live there doesn't mean you're anything. Boca Raton. I belong to the Boca Raton. What do you belong to? It's like Larry David would talk about Boca Raton. So he put his mother before she died, I would imagine. Just same thing with Martha's Vineyard. I mean, ranges from poor white trash, you know, crank-addicted youth, all the way up to bankers who are crack addicted. I said, you know, if there was one good journalist in the whole area of Boston, there must be one. One. There got to be one Tea Party related journalist. Would you please go to Martha's Vineyard? Would you please go to the airport with a pair of binoculars? Would you please write down the tail numbers of the jets on the tarmac? The tarmac. Write down the tail numbers on the tarmac, Mac. And by using a Mac or a PC of any kind, Mac, you can look on the tar and see what kind of personalities are owning those planes and who else Mr. Obama is visiting. This is legitimate. This is America. This is journalism. This is how it used to be done. The guys who smoked cigarettes and drank too much scotch and got drunk and basically didn't like humanity, they were the best reporters. Now you have an entire generation of a different type, let's put it to you that way. Do they really look for the truth? They don't look for the truth anymore. Well, what do they publish that's of any importance to us? Some of them do a good job, like when you read it in Bloomberg News that finally through the FOI they got the fact that Bernanke, Mr. Barbasol, and Geithner gave $1.2 trillion to their friends on Wall Street, which they claim they got back with interest. I don't believe it. The reason I don't believe it is if you lie once, you can lie any amount of time. Who's going to prove they got it back? Can I see the books, please? And the first they fought tooth and nail not to disclose who they gave the money to. Now they had to give it up. They, oh, yeah, but we got all the $1.2 trillion back, and we made money. The government made money? They made money like the post office makes money. The high-carbon post office. Every time the truck comes, I reach for my emergency gas mask. Every time the mail comes up the street. I never saw anything like this. All the libs scream about carbon, carbon, carbon. You want to cut down on carbon, stop the post trucks. Those old trucks, you know what I'm saying? Who uses the mail? I don't even use the mail for anything. I've been using, like, these express services for at least 15 years. I don't know anyone who uses the mail. You know why they need the mail? Welfare checks, Social Security checks, and free magazines to buy lawn furniture that you don't need. You talk about waste of paper and ink. I feel bad. I grew up in another age where you didn't waste things. I get catalogs. I never have bought a thing in my life from a catalog, but I'm reluctant to throw them out. because I know they cost money. I feel bad about immediately tossing them in the garbage. So I sometimes spend minutes. It's like crazy. I open it like a catalog from some stupid company with the most absurd devices I've ever seen, or furniture I don't need, or clothing that I don't need. And I flip through it. It's out of guilt. It's like not throwing food away in the 50s. Your parents would say, don't throw food out because there are starving people in Europe. You say to them, do you know any? No, but I know there are starving people in Europe. Don't throw. So I was raised that way, not to throw away a grain of rice, because I then read Asian philosophy. And it was very interesting. They said if every human being was throwing away rice that they left over, were to preserve even one grain of rice each, think of the billions of grains of rice a day that would be saved, which is true, by the way. Incidentally, it's philosophically very interesting. So, I mean, that doesn't mean my refrigerator is like, you know, like a hoarder. I mean, you don't go and see like moldy bread in the back. Are there any people out there who... No, let's not go down that road, please. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. I've got a petite mal migraine on the right side of my head. I don't know what it is. It's tension, the traveling, the dog, the tooth. It could be the cadaver bone from a year ago kicking up. The dentist lied to me. I'm so angry at him. Remember I told you I had an implant done a year and a half ago? It started with everything going wrong with this quack. I told him never, ever put in a cadaver bone. And they always say, oh, no, don't worry, we're going to use plastic. After he did, he told me it was cadaver bone. And my luck was probably a liberal, drunk, gay, transvestite cadaver. How would I know? And they say, well, it's sterilized and there's not one genetic, you know, 1 ounce of DNA left in the bone. How do they know that? You ever met a dentist who knows? What do you mean? They know for sure that it's not biologically active? And I start to feel maybe it's like Dr. Strangelove. I find myself doing certain things I don't even want to be doing. I think it could be the cadaver bone taking over my brain. It's actually a very interesting science fiction story. The guy goes in for a dental, right? You got the whole picture if you're writing a novel? Right, okay. And he becomes the bone, right? I gave you another novel already called The Bone. Or some idiot writer is going to sell it tomorrow. But I have a headache from it. I think it's the glue he put in with the... Why do they use dental glue? How toxic can that be? Glue in a mouth, in addition to cadaver bone. The things they do now, don't worry, it's nothing. It's like you grow breasts and you get breast cancer as a man from the dental work that they give you today. It's unbelievable what they put into your head. You have no idea which way it's coming at you, how many different toxins come at you a day. So you drink purified water and you go to a dentist and he ruins, or you purified water, low cholesterol, watch your sugar, and then you go into a hospital, they give you 4,000 x-rays and an ultra-fast CT scan of your head, and they raise your cancer potential by like 5,000% with one visit to the hospital. Not because they want to, but because of their brother-in-law, the lawyer. If they didn't give you the x-rays and they didn't diagnose you properly, no doubt that Larry David would have sued you, or his brother, let's say, Harry David, or Maxine Waters' illegitimate brother-in-law, Dirty Waters, would have probably sued you somewhere in Los Angeles for not having given you enough x-rays. I'm imagining. This is called an imaginary trip on the Savage Nation. I realize if you have a low IQ, you can't understand any of this, or you'll think I'm insulting you, or I'm insulting somehow Maxine Waters. I would never insult a woman as distinguished as her. Why would anyone want to insult Maxine Waters when she's such a distinguished congresswoman who no doubt belongs in Congress? I mean, she in fact typifies the Democrat Party. In fact, Maxine Waters typifies the Obama supporter. In fact, Maxine Waters is the Democrat Party of today, which is why I think it's wonderful that she said the Tea Party can go to hell. What she's saying is, here's the middle finger to America. Here is the middle finger, middle America. Let's go back to Joseph in Houston on the Savage Nation. Joseph, thanks for waiting. Go ahead, please.
And Dr. Savage, thanks for having me on.
All right, so before the break, I want to come back to speed because you're going to have the floor in a minute. I offered a copy of Abusive Power to people who could qualify to review it, and I asked you, what are your qualifications to get the free book, right? And you called and you identified yourself as a conservative, a politically conservative Muslim, correct? And that's where we ended. So please, you have the mic. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I mean, what I have seen, especially in the media with Obama always defending these radicals, that Muslim conservatives like myself and my family, we have been hurt just as hard as, you know, the white man has. And I mean, I don't mean that in any sort of racial terms, but I mean, in the end, I mean, all of us who believe in God, we're all, you know, brothers and sisters, we're all the children of God. And so I think that rather than arguing amongst one another about whether or not all Muslims are going to kill, you know, and the white man or the Jewish people, then we should, you know, we should band together and just get these liberals out and just, you know, I mean, we need to stop allowing Obama to tarnish the name by always defending the radicals rather than defending the actual tax-paying Muslims that live here in his own country.
I hear you. So you represent a very small quota of the Muslim Americans, or is it larger than we think?
Oh, no, it's much, much larger. See, the problem is that everybody, but a vast majority, believe that because Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, is in the White House, that they don't have to defend themselves anymore. I mean, I've heard so many of these promos of you saying that you defend those who can't speak, and that you're definitely doing that with many of the Muslim conservatives, because you prove that, you know, that we are actually sticking to the same beliefs that many Christians do by...
Well, I'm a naive person, very innocent in some ways, to be frank with you. I don't know how I've survived so many years being so naive, but truthfully, for many decades, I walked around with the false belief in my own heart. I used to feel good about it. I say, well, the monotheistic religions all believe in God. Abraham is their father. The Muslims, the Christians, and the Jews all have that in common. I felt good about it. And then I wake up one day, and all of a sudden, the radical Muslim cancer has spread because of Jimmy Carter overthrowing the Shah and ushering in Khomeini the maniac. And the next thing we know, it went viral, and radical Islam is now plaguing the planet. So I understand what you're saying, which is that you, as a God-fearing Muslim who doesn't worship a false god, you're actually more threatened than we are.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and in actuality, I mean, I've actually been asked by not only the embassy but my parents to try to avoid going back to Pakistan or India because of not only my beliefs but just how outspoken I am against the injustices I see all over. You know, I mean, like if
I. Well, you're lucky you're living here. It's the same reason my ancestors has fled Russia. They fled the Third World or the horrors of the Russian Revolution. They were anti-communist. They fled to America. So if you were to go to Pakistan, you'd be targeted probably as an anti-revolutionary, an anti-Muslim, as a Muslim, and you'd be tortured and killed. So, Joseph, in that regard, you would like to review abuse of power. You know that it has a lot to do with Muslim terrorists, but the strange part is in this novel, and I'm really praying to God that the Muslim world reads the book, the heroine is a Muslim woman like yourself whose brother had been killed in a terrorist bombing. So stay on the line, Joseph. Give us your address. We'll send you a review copy of my forthcoming novel, Abuse of Power. God bless you. Thank you for calling.
Savage.
So we spent $1 billion on Libya. That's what we're told now. $1 billion to liberate Libya from Gaddafi, and we don't know who the people with temporal mandibular disorder are. I mean, TNC. We have no idea who they are. We may as well hear that TMZ, the website, is running Libya, or TMJ is running Libya. What do you mean TNC? Transitional National Council? Who is that? Who founded that overnight? It's like a website someone made up. George Soros, no doubt, has something to do with it. I mean, look, where there's oil involved, there's money involved. Someone's going to make money off the oil. Who was getting the Libyan oil? Who was the number one recipient of Libyan oil? It was Italy and France, if I remember correctly. So Sarkozy was very big on we got to liberate the oil. But how do you know these guys are not going to, you know, put us over a barrel? You know, be nice if we got a little oil out of Iraq. We're looking to Libya. Libya supplied 2% of the world's oil, while Iraq's sitting on the third or fourth largest oil reserves in the world. We spent trillions of dollars liberating those ingrates. Men came home in body bags and with parts missing. George Bush lied when he said we're going to have reparations in the form of oil, if you remember, because I have an elephant's memory. Bush lied. He said, we will have reparations after we liberate Iraq. I remember when he first went in there. They have not given us a dinar. They have not given us camel dung. They've given us nothing, not a barrel of oil. And I don't understand how the people take this. I don't get it. I know why we haven't demanded the oil. It's because the Seven Sister Oil Companies do not want more oil in flow. They want to arbitrarily keep the price at an arbitrary level so that we get raped at the gas pump. But the fact of the matter is we should have demanded reparations out of the Iraqis. And if they didn't give it to us, just take it. That's all. Pump it and take it, and you can go to hell. Use Maxine Waters' line. Okay, tell the Iraqis to hell with you. I mean, we spent $2 trillion liberating you from Saddam, and now you're holding us up and giving the oil rights to China? We're taking it. To the victor belongs the spoils. But no, we don't need the oil, because the Seven Sisters Oil Companies actually wanted the opposite. They wanted the price to go up, not down.
Savage.
All right, so let me go back here with this DSK case, the Frenchie, Frisky Frenchman. I told you it was a setup. You didn't have to be a genius to know that it was done by Sarkozy or by the International Monetary Fund folks who wanted to get him out of there and put Christine Lagarde in there so that she would support Obama with his attempt to destroy America with raising the debt limit. So they know he has a weakness, like in The Godfather. They go after his weakness. They send in this dirtbag Diallo, in my opinion. She arranges consensual sex for money. And then being French, he probably, you know, held back something or didn't pay her at all. She goes crazy, whatever. Or he paid her, and then she screams rape. So she files a civil lawsuit accusing Strauss-Kahn, former head of the International Monetary Fund, of sexually assaulting her in mid-May, and they arrest him. They do take him off the Air France jet, and the rest of this history is all done to bring him down from the IMF and install her to support Obama and the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. I don't want to throw in the Bilderbergs, but I may as well at the same time. Their desire, in other words, to raise the American debt limit and bankrupt us further so they can continue to pay themselves these obscene salaries. So now the rape charges are dismissed against them. And today, Manhattan prosecutors reported analysis of carpet stains in the Frenchman's $3,000 night Sofitel hotel room contained the semen and DNA of three unknown men. You hear this? DNA of a fourth unknown man. Now, first of all, I don't want to get into any further details because these deposits of other men's DNA, frankly, have nothing to do with the 62-year-old's deposits. They were just in the hotel room, which actually ties into an earlier part of the story and a theme of the show, which is why I don't travel and why I hate hotels. You're going to sit on a bed cover in a hotel with a young child. Do you understand what I just said to you? Do you happen to know how dirty hotel rooms are? You have to have a microscopic analysis kit in order to go to a hotel today. You take your life in your hands. Do you realize what I just said to you? The semen is on the covers. It's on the walls. What else is on the walls and the covers of that clean hotel room wherever you may go? And this is in a $3,000 a night room. Can you imagine what you're getting in Motel 6? Take a guess what you're getting in a Motel 6 with cinder block walls. I told you, I went to, where was I? I forget, somewhere in Mexico about 2 years ago with the family. They drugged me there against my will. And I sat on the bed. Dad would get you the corner room with the air, the land. You look, okay, fine. So I sit on the bed. I don't know. I didn't like the mattress. I pulled back the bed cover. I didn't like the look of the sheet somehow. I pulled back the sheet. There was a blood stain on the sheet. Either someone had given birth in the hotel room or died there. Either it was a drug hit or someone gave. I couldn't tell. I went crazy. Senor this, senor that. They wouldn't change the mattress. I went. So they finally come up and inspect it. They said, no, it's okay. It's dried. What? Because the blood is dried? You want me to sleep on that thing? Are you crazy? Remember, this was Mexico 2 years ago, before the head started appearing on highway overpasses. So they eventually changed the mattress. But you see, that wasn't the only reason I don't like to travel. Now let's go into the kitchen of your average hotel. Take a look at who's working there. You think that they're clean because they wear a white paper hat? Are you crazy? You want them touching your food? You know, lavos los manos? Are you kidding me? I'm going to lavos my manos. I'll lavos your manos, man. I'm going to lavos nothing. So this is how it winds up at the end of the day. You don't want to take your life in your hands wherever you go. All right, so the alternative is what? You're going to stay home and just like eat out of a can? Or you're going to sterilize everything? Well, yeah, it's close to what you need to do. Make your own tuna fish sandwiches and, you know, carry them with you. I mean, because it gets pretty bad. Like if I order a beer, I take the bottle. Do you want a glass? No, thank you. A, it smells of chlorine. B, and it could have DSK's mouth on it. You know what I'm saying? And you didn't dip it into the hot water well enough for me. Thank you very much. Or the maid's mouth. She could have had the beer. And who do you have there putting it in the dishwasher to begin with? Some drunk behind the bar. So I drink out of the bottles. One of the reasons I like bottled beer is I know the beer bottles are sterilized. You know what I'm saying? That's a definite. Actually, it's why I came to like beer before wine, because you can't drink wine out of a bottle. You can, but it's not classy. You know what I'm saying? You can drink beer out of a bottle in a restaurant. It's not classy, I admit. But there's a way to do it if you flip it. You could actually be in a decent restaurant and drink beer out of a bottle and not be like seen as gauche, tremendously gauche. You just tip it slightly, like quickly, and just like I didn't even drink it. Like pick it up. You're like talking, and just like do a flip of the wrist, and you don't have to guzzle it. You don't hold it up like a horse or like Francis the Talking Mule, you know, drinking out of a milk bottle, slurp, slurp. So you could drink a beer like at a dinner, right, and get away with it. Like, no one will even notice. But I don't like a beer glass. First of all, they're like made for a truck driver's hands. If you're at talk shows, you generally don't have hands like for that size, like for throwing footballs and catching soccer balls with one hand in the middle of a field. You know what I'm saying? It's like not made for like a beer glass. Men drink beer. They're big glasses of beer. Okay, so here we are. Back to the reality of the politics, boring out of my mind with it. Libya, knew it was a bad scene, going to get worse. So now listen again to Obama. This is his missive coming out of Martha's Vineyard in between his Chardonnay dinners with the head of Comcast and God knows who else, maybe Al Jazeera. He tells us how good it is that he overthrew Gaddafi in clip one.
Earlier this year, we were inspired by the peaceful protests that broke out across Libya.
Hold on. Wait. I was inspired by that? I was inspired by the town hall meetings in America and by the peaceful protests called the Tea Parties, which your cohort, Maxine Waters, said can go to hell, Mr. Obama. I was never inspired by the peaceful protests that broke out across Libya or Egypt, my friend. Now we'll go to clip two.
In the early days of this intervention, the United States provided the bulk of the firepower. And then our friends and allies stepped forward.
Wait a minute. We don't have any friends and allies. Remember, they hated us and called us John Wayne? The only reason they stepped forward is because they wanted the oil. And we were stupid enough to let them have all of it. So now let's hear clip four.
We will join with allies and partners to continue the work of safeguarding the people of Libya. As remaining regime elements menace parts of the country, I've directed my team to be in close contact with NATO, as well as the United Nations.
NATO.
Other steps that we can take. To deal with the humanitarian impact. Working to ensure that critical supplies reach those in need. Particularly medical. Those who've been wounded. Secretary Clinton spoke today with her counterparts from leading nations of the
coalition. I don't want to hear about her counterparts. Her counterparts are not on this earth. Hillary Clinton's counterparts are not on the planet. Counterpart. That's something I started hearing years ago, my counterpart. They're so egotistical, these bureaucrats. It's unbelievable. Madeleine Albright used to say, I met with my counterpart in North Korea. Who would that be? The head of the concentration camps? The head of the gulag in North Korea? What do you mean, your counterpart? Oh, you can't speak below your counterpart level. Your peer is a counterpart. What counterpart could there be in Libya right now when a bunch of so-called unknown rabble are running the country? What counterpart? Who would it be? They have already a Secretary of State of Libya? The rebels already have a counterpart. Which guy in a hood is the counterpart? Which guy in sunglasses is a counterpart? What is she talking about? And already we're giving money to Libya. You hear this? We're a basket case. We're giving them money. They have oil. We have nothing, but we're giving them money. DNA of three different unknown males, additional unknown individuals were found on the walls. The whole thing is unbelievable to me, which is why I tell you I recommend a camper. I mean, you were worried about bed bugs. Now you know what to really worry about. Bed bug you could see. At least you know what a bed bug is in a sheet. But you, what you don't see on the sheet or on the... It's the bed cover itself that you got to worry about. $3,000 a night, and there's the semen of three men on the sheets, on the carpet and on the walls? How much more do you have to play for a non-semen suite? I that's what I want to know, Beowulf, if I can demand one. Can I now demand a Fatal chain, Beowulf? Do you think we can get that?
Maybe.
How much would that cost? Let's see. If it's $3,000, unbelievable what goes on in this world. It's amazing. Why don't they analyze it and see if it belongs to anyone on a known list, any other politicians? I think there's like a DNA bank of politicians. No, let's not go there. The smoking gun reported out. Turns out that DSK Swangel told us we were staying with the semen of four other guys. That is disgusting. Well, it's not really. It's just human. It's not disgusting. It's a human. It's a product of the human body. I don't find it disgusting. What's disgusting is the hotels are filthy. That's what's disgusting. I told you there was no rape. I want to see the dirtbag deported and her lawyer defrocked. That's all. He probably got the law degree the same way that Sharpton got his divinity degree. That lawyer tried to shake him down last. Remember what he did last week? I never saw a lawyer like this. I'll drop all of the charges of rape against you if you'll pay us off to go away. And they didn't put him in jail? That guy must have gone to NYU Law School for that. No, probably Harvard on a full scholarship. That would be a move from either Harvard or Yale in this day and age, what they have there going to law schools. How could they get away with that? They're running a rape case against the guy.
And they say to his lawyers, we'll drop the rape case if you pay us off to go away. There'll be no charges whatsoever. I think that's called blackmail, isn't it? By any other name? So I would like to see the dirtbag deported to her native homeland of somewhere in Africa. And I'd like to see him defrocked. He could always go work for Eric Holder, though, in the Justice Department. That's what I actually didn't think about that. He could definitely go to work for the U.S. Justice Department, this lawyer. He's about on the same level as most of them by what I read. But what the kind of cases they're doing. You cannot believe what Eric Holder is doing. The CIA thing, it's unbelievable. It's a whole separate story. I'm not ready to get into it. I'll lose my breath. The New York Times outs the CIA agents, okay? And the New York Times doesn't get prosecuted by Holder, but Murdoch does. That's A. And the CIA agents who were outed are now mortgaging their houses to defend themselves because Eric Holder is going after them tooth and claw while not prosecuting the guy who killed everybody at Fort Hood, number one, nor is he prosecuting the detainees at Guantanamo because it would be too embarrassing to show America what they actually did. We have never lived through times like this. So it's time for me to take another call right here on the Savage Nation in Mississippi. Greg, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. How are you this evening? Dr. Savage?
Yeah, today is a what?
I couldn't hear you echo on the phone. This is basically I'm a PhD student who is an ultra-conservative and lived in Latin America for all of the time of the 90s working with AIG. And what we've got here in the United States is nothing short of plenty compared to those countries that you just talked about in Mexico and the filth. And those are the normal states for those people. But what I was calling you for was about your book. I would be real interested in reviewing it, what I've watched and what I've seen. Planet of the Apes, all of the classics. I'm rereading Tom Clancy's Op Center, Clear and Present Danger, those types, Richard Marcinko's Seal series.
So you'd be a perfect reader for Abuse of Power. You're going to love my book, I hope. Okay, Greg, stay in the line. We'll get you a free copy. But, I mean, I don't know what the guy's going to write. So if you qualify to review my book, you can call my show any day this week or next, and we'll try to get you a review copy. And then you can send your review after you get the book to a special link we've set up on michaelsavage.com. Of course, we can't get your reviews yet since you haven't gotten the book. Like, we got fake reviews going up already on the internet from people who, you know, are political operatives of the left. They're trying to slam me. They don't know they're just going to make the book sell better. Unless maybe Obama's already set up a review division of the White House. Maybe David Axelrod has set up a book review division. Look at this ad. Stop bear baiting. I just thought about that. I couldn't sleep last night. I'm psychic. I was dreaming of a bear whose foot got caught in the bear trap. How cruel that is. And how, if it wasn't for animal rights activists, how much more suffering there would be in the animal world. You know, I was thinking about that. Like, the bear trap is one of the most cruel things on earth. Oh, because I was watching an I Survive segment of a man whose arm got caught in a home boiler. And he got stuck there for 3 days, yelling, screaming. His arm is in the boiler, right? And like, his dog is upstairs in the basement. His dog is crying, hasn't eaten for 3 days. And the guy's dying. So he's like, he starts to cut his arm off with a saw that he can reach. And blood's all over the boiler, all over his body. So he starts to think he's going to die. And he writes on the thing, I love you, Mom and Dad, and how much I love my dog. And I couldn't believe what I was watching. The guy cut his arm off with a saw to get out of the boiler. And then I couldn't sleep because I was thinking about bears and other animals who are caught in traps, how they must suffer. I mean, I'm not against trapping an animal humanely, eating an animal humanely. There is such a way, if you want to put it that way. But to put him in a trap where the animal suffers for days or weeks with an arm caught in it, they bite their arm off? How could you consider it? You know, you may as well move to Mongolia where they do that for fun, where they breed dogs and kill them while they're alive because they taste better. Yeah, go visit your friends in China or North Korea. Go visit what they do to dogs over there, or you lovers of China. Go visit the country folk of China and see how you're going to be treated when they take over the country. They'll put you in a cage. I'll be right back, you. Okay.
I came to meet with the Vice President of China at his invitation to discuss how we grow our economy and how we create jobs. Chinese own 8% of the treasury bills and 1% of America's assets, and we welcome their investment.
I'm not afraid of anybody. This is a tough game. You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
See, that's the Obama constituency. You got Joe Biden, who's an expert at water gunning in China, welcoming more of their ownership of America, and Maxine Waters telling the taxpayers of America, who are the Tea Party, by the way. See, I don't know any welfare recipients in the Tea Party, do you? You don't need welfare recipients in the Tea Party? No, I don't know any. You know any government employees in the Tea Party? I don't know any. The people in the Tea Party are probably 99% either business owners or workers, taxpayers, in other words, middle-class taxpayers. So we learned that the Democrat Party is anti-middle-class, period, end of story. Now we hear from Obama that we welcome the overthrow of Gaddafi, and we learned today that Sharia law is coming to Libya. I have never seen anything like this. Now, either it's knowingly introducing radical Islam to the world or by accident. It doesn't matter. Either way, they're destroying the stability of the universe, this party. I've never seen anything like this. The United States officially recognized the Libyan Transitional National Council, the so-called TNC, as the legitimate governing body of Libya back in July. Who are they? Does anyone know who they are? Here is what the government itself says. It says, although the United States is optimistic about working with the TNC, we are not aware of any direct relationship between the TNC and Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, and the Libya Islamic Fighting Group, or any other terrorist organization, said the White House. They're not aware of any. What are they also not aware of? They're not aware that that the U.S. Treasury gave $1.2 trillion to their friends on Wall Street. They weren't aware of that? Can you believe this? So we now know that the opposition forces in Libya are no doubt members of the previously banned organizations, including the Libyan Muslim Brotherhood, who are now organized and participating in Libyan society. So although Gaddafi was bad, there's an old phrase, the devil you know, okay? The fact of the matter is, as bad as Gaddafi was, you can bet this group will be worse. As bad as Mubarak was, he was our ally for over 40 years. He kept a peace with Israel for well over 20 or so years. And now you're supposed to celebrate the fact that he's in a cage being tried by these goons of Egypt. The only people who could celebrate that would be CNN, saying it's people power. And this is the problem. I told you before, liberalism is a mental disorder. If you start with the correct theorem, everything falls in place. Liberalism is a mental disorder. All you got to do is watch one episode of Larry David, and you'll see a self-mocking Jew unlike any you've ever seen in history, and lauded as a king of the Jews. I have to say it. I'm sorry. I don't care who says what to me. Larry David is the Stepan Fetchit of the Jewish people. In the 1940s, Stepan Fetchit played a servile black, and he was loved by white audiences because whites wanted to believe that blacks were that way. No black would dare play that role, nor would it get produced. But there's no problem in producing a Jewish Stepan Fetchit in the form of either Woody Allen, okay, or Larry David. And they don't even understand that they're destroying the image of the Jewish people. They don't care because they're making so much money. That's all that matters. All that matters is that they're mocking Jews, making them look like dirtbags and degenerates and cowards, and they're making a fortune. That's all that matters to that group. And by the way, he owns a home in Martha's Vineyard. And by the way, Larry David was in the core group that put Obama on the map before he was president, by the way. So if you want to connect the dots up to what's going on in the world, tune in tomorrow for another great serial episode of The Savage Nation, or listen to the next hour. In the interim, visit michaelsavage.com. Check out a copy of Abuse of Power before you can't buy one. No doubt it's going to be sold out before it even hits the stores the way trickle-up poverty was. Remember what happened the first week? They didn't print enough? All right. Be here.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Some of the questions we're asking on the Savage Nation. Do you actually approve of Obama overthrowing Gaddafi? And who do you think is more dangerous, Gaddafi or those who will replace him? Also, do you think it's appropriate for Mr. Obama to be meeting with the CEO of Comcast, who owns NBC and MSNBC, when that network displays blatant bias in favor of President Obama? Can you remember or can you name any other president who met with the head of a major media company? I'm sure it's happened. Who else do you think Obama's meeting with at Martha's Vineyard? We learned today the government gave $1.2 trillion to Wall Street bigwigs. Wall Street bigwigs. $1.2 trillion. It had to be drug out of them. They would not acknowledge, they actually wouldn't release the information of who they gave the money to until they were sued. And under the Freedom of Information Act, we learned that Obama gave $1.2 trillion to Wall Street to play with. Now, what do you think should be done with this? Answer, what's the difference what you think? You don't live in a democracy. Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Also today, as I predicted, the frisky Frenchman is being released of all charges. All charges dropped against him. No rape charges because he didn't rape her. The dirtbag made... I believe should not only be fined and her lawyer disbarred, she should be deported immediately. You will see what comes out very soon from the dirtbag who accused him. You remember first she was a sacred Muslim, then she was a poor oppressed this, then a poor oppressed that. Then it turned out she was just what we all thought she was from day one. A gold-digging, lying, no good, well, you fill in the blank. New draft constitution in Libya. Doesn't hold promise for America. It holds Sharia law as the principal source of law. How do you like that? I'm not shocked. After all, isn't what Obama wants? Sharia law around the world? Except, of course, here, because he's not a Muslim. What else is in the news? Well, everything that we've been talking about. Let's see what else. Let us see what else. Let us see what else. Oh, boy, you really want to hear these stories? Okay, we'll go to michaelsavage.com and make you hear these stories. Top right, Wall Street aristocracy got $1.2 trillion from Fed. Just told you that, I'll tell it to you again. Top left, get ready, get set, go! Journalism, terrorism, patriotism. Just how far up does the abuse of power reach? Read Abuse of Power by Michael Savage coming September 13th. If you want to read a chapter for free, go to michaelsavage.com and then you can pre-order your copy to make sure you get one. Obama crushes Gaddafi and ushers in what? Kucinich, remember that character? He speaks out at the Seattle Pot Festival, where he compared legalization of pot to the civil rights movement. At this so-called hemp festival, a so-called father was smoking dope in front of a toddler at the hemp fest. Isn't liberalism great? Obama pays Sunday visit to the CEO of Comcast. Take a look at the line of Secret Service cars. Outed, Obama's secret visitors must release list. Maxine Waters says Tea Party can go straight to hell. Frankly, I think that's good news because people are finally seeing who she actually is. Millions of new disability applicants bankrupting the system. I'm not shocked. In Israel, Gaza continues to rain rockets down on Israeli civilians, but you wouldn't know that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to you. Ron Paul warns Savage of next bubble burst. Gay illegal couples were the first to benefit from Obama's amnesty of illegal aliens, don't you know? 1-800-449-8255. Nixon's Air Force One pilot Ralph Albert
Albert Tazi died at age 88. You should see the picture of the real hero. Two men critical after violence at the Niners-Raiders game. Yeah, one of them was, I think, killed by a perp. They said a Samoan or Pacific Islander, 260 pounds, punched him and almost killed him. Cleveland rapper arrested for prompting flash mob. I don't know who he is, never heard of him. This is a crazy story. Crazed pothead stabs scout leader to death. Riots in England are the end of the liberals' great moral delusion. Take a look at the pictures. Lawyer says penis amputee doesn't feel like a man. It's cut off by accident. Speaking of penis envy, a Ferrari was auctioned off for a record $16.4 million, the highest price ever paid for a car at auction. Well, and this is it on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Putting aside all threats from the Muslim Brotherhood and from the meddler in the White House, we're putting aside the thuggery of the unions, George Soros' megalomania and desire to take over the world. We're putting aside all the temporary problems of the world, and I'm going to answer your questions. Are they sexual in nature, financial, personal? Is it a problem with your boss? Is it with your husband? This is Mike Savage, Life Coach. Wisconsin Shannon, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I need help with the fact that I'm a hardcore Democrat. My husband is a hardcore Republican.
So what's the problem?
Well, every time there's something going on in our state or federal, it sparks huge arguments between the two of us.
So do what women have done for centuries, withhold sex.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Why?
We have a six-month-old baby, so he doesn't have them very often anyways.
Well, that's what babies are for, aren't they? To keep the husband away.
It's the best birth control ever, that's for
absolutely.
Sure.
I mean, one of the reasons women used to have babies every year or so was to make sure the husband left them alone. Well, I don't know what the problem is. You're not going to change his mind. He's not going to change yours. You're a communist and he's a Republican. What are you going to do?
Is there any way to, even it out?
Well, I mean, is there any way for him to reach you with any reason? In other words, if your state is broke and bankrupt and the governor's asking teachers to pay a small amount towards their own pension and their own health care, does that not make sense to you? Where should the money come from?
From other...
Hello? Where should the money come from?
There's other ways to cut spending.
Wait, hold on. What do you mean there are other ways to cut spending? Why is it that people who work for a private company contribute to their own pensions and their own health care, but government workers should not? Is that fair? You're a Democrat. You're a fair-minded Democrat. Why should state workers be exempt from sharing the burden of supporting themselves?
Teachers don't make very much for wages.
Okay, that's a very good point, but neither do people in the private sector today. At least they have a job in teaching. They have a job that's secure. That's better than a lot of people who don't have any job at all.
Understandable.
You see, Shannon, things have changed. The world is not what it was when your parents were alive. Thank you for the call. Oh, does that husband have trouble? I see there's no way to reason with people when they make... Salt Lake City, Ryan, what's your question for Dr. Savage?
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'm 33 years old. I have a bachelor's degree, but I'm thinking about going back to get my MBA. I just don't know if it's going to pay off in the long run if I spend the $50,000 to get the MBA. Is it going to pay off for me later on?
My suggestion is forget the MBA, spend $400 on a life coach degree and become a life coach. You'll make more money faster.
That could be true.
I hear people are doing it. They're actually paying some people money to get
some kind of like experience in being a life coach. How the heck could you become a life coach if you haven't lived?
Yeah, I don't know.
What are they going to advise people of if they haven't gone through it themselves? Now, as far as an MBA goes, I don't know. There was a time when it was a union card to a job in a corporation. Do MBAs really teach you today what you need to know in this economy? I can't answer that question. Do you have a family business, perhaps, that you're thinking of taking over? Or you got to create your own business?
Well, as of right now, I'm already employed, and it's always kind of been a dream of mine to be an entrepreneur and maybe start a business. But
Then why do you need an MBA? An MBA requires a good idea, some money, and the ability to go ahead and do it. You don't need an MBA for that. I mean, you need to know the basic principles of a business, marketing, etc. You need to know how to do that, but I don't know that you don't need a degree for that today. You could go on the internet right now and you could run a search that says what do I need to know to run a small business? Give me 10 steps. You could probably find it in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, and that's true, but I mean, if that doesn't work out, if I need to, you know, lean back on a larger corporation, will it give me a head?
All right, that's another point. In other words, if you're looking to tomorrow in a more competitive marketplace, the MBA certainly would distinguish you from an applicant with an ordinary bachelor's degree. In that regard, yes. I'm always for that higher degree if it's from a decent university, and that's what you want. If, on the other hand, you're looking really to be an entrepreneur, you've got to think about what your best ideas might be. You know, the old statement, build a better mousetrap and people will be the door a path to your doorstep. It's still true, by the way. It is still true. In fact, even in a down economy, people are still spending money, right?
Right.
Okay. So it's not like suddenly no one's buying anymore. They're not trading like oyster shells for their dinner. They're spending money. So if you put out a better product in a restaurant, people are going to go to it at a good price. Or whatever I don't know what your ideas are. You have to start thinking about your ideas rather than the degree. I'd put my ideas ahead of my degrees. Then I'd worry about it. You could hire an MBA to be your partner. Hire an MBA who killed himself for 3 years and make him the CFO and give him a piece of the business. Let him figure out all the angles of the business if you have a good idea. And you could you could sidestep having to go to school.
All right.
I know some of the people I know who are the most successful, whether they be in the media or in business, never even went to college, by the way. And they're multimillionaires because they had a good idea and they were willing to invest their own time and energy and build that business. And it could still be done. As I say, even in a down economy, there are products that have not yet been invented that people who are looking for a way out of a down economy would if I was hungry for money right now, I could come up with 5 ideas to get people to follow me right now and to give them the hope that they might find the way out of the morass they're in. I wouldn't do it because I don't want to exploit anybody. But there are ways that you can come up with ideas every day of the week, Ryan. Good economy, bad economy, it doesn't matter.
All right, thank you.
Anyway, so the bottom line of my answer to you is this. If you're thinking of security and you want to go in a big corporation, yes, go for the MBA. If, on the other hand, you have a better mousetrap that you want to put out and market right now, go to work with an MBA. Make him your CFO. Give him a piece of the business. If he thinks it's good, give him a percentage and let him go out and raise the money and go sell it. Thanks for the call. I'd like a sex question right now. Oh, here we got one here. Alabama, Elaine, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. My husband has not made or shown any interest in being intimate with me in 4 years or longer. And every time I pinpoint it and sit him down and question him about it, he will start cursing me and just jump up and leave the room. Mm. And so I was wondering what your...
How many years have you been together?
31.
Well, look, I don't want to make any jokes about it, but, you know, the romantic phase ended a while ago, correct?
Well, you with me it was forced, but...
With you what was forced?
It was forced to end with me because he's not interested, and I'm not about...
Well, hold on. So what is the basis of your relationship if it's not sexual? What keeps you together at all? You have something in common. There must be some reason. Is there a companionship element to the relationship at this point or not?
We're good friends.
Are you good friends? Do you fight all the time, or do you actually enjoy your company with him other than the sexual loss?
We enjoy each other's company other than that.
Well, let me tell you something. Elaine, you know, there's a little wisdom in what I'm going to tell you. You ask anyone going back any period of time, and they'll tell you that any long-term relationship primarily has to be based upon companionship. If you've got that, you've got 95% of the package, Elaine. A lot of people have sexuality. They have no relationship, though. They have no companionship and no care for each other. So sometimes you have to take what you have. I know the other side of you is dying. That's another story. I can't answer that one because I don't know what the dynamics are between you and your husband.
Your opinion, because I sure don't.
But what I'm going to say to you is, without being a wise guy, is if you have kindness between each other and you enjoy each other's company, instead of approaching him with, why aren't you making love to me? Why are you rejecting my advances? Why don't you try to emphasize with him how much you enjoy being with him and put that aside for a while? Don't even think about it. Try to put it aside, so, because he'll pick up the vibes that you're not approaching him to go to bed with him. You're approaching him because you like being with him, and maybe that will come back again. You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
That's how I would approach that. Now, I thought that was a very sensitive answer from Dr. Mike. I think it was very touching. I thought, see, I'm doing a very good job, better than most psychiatrists. They would tell you to meet him in a motel and get ropes and, you know, get dirty movies. I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist, so I don't think that way. I know how they think, though, because I read enough of the newspapers. You know, you ever see these articles you see in the paper? How to make your sex life more interesting. I mean, it's like a trapeze act. Meet him in a motel outside a racetrack and bring clothesline. I never saw anything like this. If you have to do that already, what's the point? You may as well join a nunnery rather than do that. So what I would say is forget the sexuality and work on the companionship and the kindness. See if you can enjoy each other. That's all. So I think that was a very nice answer. I'm very happy with it.
Savage.
Well, you know, the headline on MichaelSavage.com is Obama overthrows Gaddafi, ushering in question mark. I mean, the so-called rebels in Libya are now entering Tripoli, and the liberals are cheering. And it looks like Obama has overthrown Gaddafi even while he's on vacation at Martha's Vineyard. Yeah, but there's a lot of questions to be asked, such as who are the rebels? Joining us now is Christopher Preble, the Vice President for Defense and Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Mr. Preble, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on today.
What's your opinion of this so-called revolution in Libya?
Well, I think there's a couple issues that I think are worth remembering. First of all, it's a little premature to declare victory. I certainly, you know, I share the hope, I think, of nearly everyone in the world that Muammar Gaddafi's days are numbered. That appears to be the case. We hope that's the case. But, of course, we have to remember that if we had written the history of the Iraq War on the day that Saddam's statue was torn down in Firdaus Square, we'd have a very different story of what actually happened in Iraq. I don't think that's going to happen in Libya. I don't think that's likely, certainly. It's certainly not inevitable. What that means is you have to prepare for what comes after. And we don't, unfortunately, know a whole lot about who is likely to replace Muammar Gaddafi. We know a bit more about them than when the whole operation started back in March. But the danger in a situation like this is that what really united the rebel movement was their opposition to Gaddafi. And when Gaddafi goes, will that unity break down? I think that's something that we all should be concerned about and focused on preventing as best we can, although it's very one of the points I'd like to make is it's very difficult for the United States to have much leverage in that. This is ultimately is going to be decided. It's a cliche, but it's true. It's going to be decided by the Libyan people, not by the American people or by Europeans or anyone else for that matter. So that's one point.
Yeah, what lessons do you think we can take away from this?
And I still think there are two that are troubling to me. One is, what criteria do we use for sending U.S. troops, men and women in uniform, into harm's way? If the rule is, well, we send them wherever we can, whenever we can, that's not a very stringent guidelines and very stringent criteria. And I think that that's problematic. I think when former Secretary of Defense Bob Gates said that there was no compelling U.S. national security interest at stake in Libya, that was sufficient reason on my part for us to not become involved. But there are others in Washington who believe that the U.S. military's job is not primarily to defend the United States, but it's to do other good things on behalf of other people. And I think that's that opens up a whole can of worms, frankly. It's very hard to differentiate one intervention from the next if none of them are mainly about advancing U.S. national security. So I wonder about that. And the third point is, the constitutional questions that we saw surface over the whole course of this Libya operation, where the president said essentially Congress had no role here, that the President Obama and his administration went to the UN Security Council to obtain authorization for this mission, but they didn't go to the Congress. There was considerable resistance to the mission, and I think growing opposition in Congress on the grounds that the members there read the Constitution, and they read the provision in the Constitution that says that it's Congress, not the White House, that has the power to declare war. I didn't see this as a partisan thing. This was not merely the fact that there were Republicans who were critical of Barack Obama, because we have to be honest, there were some Republicans who were very supportive of the mission in Libya. But the fact remains that there were some important questions raised about what role Congress should have, and I don't think that they were settled in a way that would satisfy a strict and careful reading of the founders' intentions in the Constitution. So I would hope that debate would continue and not that the Libyan operation is taken as an example, as a marker by those who would have the president wage war whenever he wants, wherever he wants, and just kind of write Congress out of the story.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, in terms of in Libya itself, there is always the potential for two things. One is, again, the fighting has not settled down completely. There's still some sporadic fighting going on. I think it's realistic to expect that the few Gaddafi loyalists that there may be, will fight very hard to hold on to what little they have left and to try to regain what they had once. And it's we call them the dead enders in Iraq, and I think there's a certain kind of poetry to that. It's a certain truth to that. But if we assume that Gaddafi does fall, his regime falls, if the Transitional National Council quickly assembles a government that has the support of the Libyan people, can command the authority in the country, can establish order, can start to ramp up oil production, which means revenues flowing to the new state, then I think that's the best that can be hoped for in the near term. I think in the medium to long term, I think it is likely that U.S.-Libyan relations will improve. It's hard for them to be much worse than they were very recently, although we have to remember that George W. Bush reached out to Muammar Gaddafi as an ally, potential ally against al-Qaeda. But I think that's where the focus shifts. It's both on the way that the new government manages Libya. Does it govern effectively? Does it respect human rights? But also, is it an ally against al-Qaeda and other extremist groups? I think that's where U.S. foreign policy, where U.S. policymakers will be focusing their attention in the near term.
Well, is there any definite plan we could look at and say, well, this is how this administration's foreign policy works? Is there any sense to it?
No, I'm afraid we can't. There is no hard and fast rule that defines when President Obama chooses to send U.S. troops into harm's way and when he chooses not to. We, in this particular case, administration officials said that this case was unique because we had strong international support. There was a clear military mission in the very short term. but I don't think they thought through very well the long-term ramifications of this intervention. I don't think they thought through very well the precedent that it set. And I think it doesn't answer the question of where next. Where will the U.S. military go? What other regimes are being challenged by their own people? Where will the United States choose to become involved? I think it's just an open question. We just don't know. I do think, and I've already mentioned it, I think it's troubling that the administration really went out of their way to try to articulate a new interpretation of their constitutional authority that invoked the UN Security Council, for example, but essentially wrote Congress out of the equation. I think that's a problem. And I think, not surprisingly, there are members of Congress and others who take the Constitution very seriously who did not appreciate that. And I think that's the next place where we're likely to see some pushback if the president attempts a similar intervention elsewhere. I think there's going to be more proactive opposition on the grounds that at a minimum, the president has to obtain congressional authorization, especially when the use of the U.S. military is not, it's not to deal with an imminent threat to U.S. national security. It's not to defend the United States of America. It is to advance some other purpose. I just think it's absolutely essential that the American people, through the representatives in Congress, weigh in on those interventions before the fact, not after.
Are there any signs that things are going to get better?
Well, I think that they're not signs so much from this particular case, but I think that more broadly there is a recognition that the U.S. military is stretched very, very thin, that we've asked our troops to do a lot of things, especially since 9/11. Not all of those things have actually made us safer from terrorism. Some of them have made our problem worse. And I think there's an urgent need to prioritize the mission set that we are giving to our troops in the field, and to not just assume that they can take more and more responsibilities on their shoulders. I think that kind of is hanging over the conduct of U.S. foreign policy and will be for the foreseeable future. It is simply no longer the case that the U.S. military is going to continue to grow, the budget's going to continue to grow along the trajectory that it's grown over the past 12, 15 years. And therefore, in this environment of whatever you want to call it, fiscal austerity or resource constraints, it's just absolutely essential that we prioritize roles and missions. I think the administration missed an opportunity to do that proactively, and now I think it's going to be forced on them by the budget, by the circumstances that are beyond their control.
Christopher Preble, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
It's a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you very much.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Into the city, go to this Chinese restaurant. Now, for one, the parking is enough to give you indigestion if you get there, and it's terrible, just awful. That already gives you indigestion. There's no point in going. So I get there. I've eaten there for 20 years, and they still mistreat us. It's just that I don't know if it's a nature of the business. They don't like me. It's racism. I don't know what it is. I can't tell. I get in there. I order a number of dishes, and I'm meeting a friend, and they bring us immediately the pot stickers and the steamed dim sum within 5 minutes. I said, well, tonight's going to be different. Now I'm three beers into the meal and there are no dishes. And everyone who came in after me is eating. Eight times I get up, where's the food? Then they bring it out and the rice is at the end. It was a mess. Okay, a nightmare. I'm never going there again. But wait, the best is yet to come. My friend John, who's a philosophy professor, shows up a few minutes late. And he comes and he says, I had to park in a driveway around the corner. I hope I don't get a ticket. So right away, that's double anxiety. I don't blame him. There's no parking. Then he runs out 5 minutes later, and he puts a note in his windshield which says, please don't tell me, call my cell phone number if you want me to move. Sure enough, in the middle of the meal, ring, ring. Oh, I'll be right out. So I go out with him, because John is a philosophy professor, and he's not street smart. I just had an instinct I better be with him. Sure enough, there's a crazed Russian in the street. He had parked not only in the guy's driveway, but right against the guy's bumper, and the Russian is insanely mad, screaming and yelling, you have no brains! No brains! No brains! No brains! Stupid, stupid, stupid brain! No brains! What, you have no brains? Why are you parking my car? And he's crazy. He's livid. Now, I know how to defuse street situations, and John, the philosophy professor, doesn't know anything about this kind of interchange. Everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. I'm trying to calm things down. I had had 4 beers already. So I said to him, look, tell you what, just calm down. You have no brains! No. And he's screaming and yelling the Russian, no brains, stupid! And he's in everyone's face. So I said, this could escalate, turn very bad. You know, guns, knives, you don't know what's going to... Crazy relatives from the Ukraine could come out with tattoos from jail. You don't know where this is going to go. I'm trying to defuse it. So I'm saying to my friend, look, back the car up. I said, if there's any damage, I will pay you. I figured money talks, right? I wasn't saying it was anyone's fault. No brains. I don't care. Damage. No brains. No brains. And he's on and on with the no brains. I said, look, my friend is a philosophy professor. I don't care. No brains. Why on my car? So I said, John, back the car up. John backs the car up, and there's no damage whatsoever. So the Russian gets down on his knees, and he says, no brains, stupid! No brains anyway! I don't care, damage, no damage, stupid, no brains! So I said, look, is there damage? If there's damage, I'll pay. No brains, stupid! Stupid man! I said, look, is there damage? And I'm saying, John, get in the car and get out of here. I'm going to take care of it. Go! And John doesn't go. John sits there and starts in with the guy, I want to see you smile. I said, oh, my God. Now, the worst nightmare, you're telling an enraged Russian to smile? What does he think? This is a textbook in Marin County? He wants to see a smile out of an enraged Russian. He parked on his bumper. You know what that's like? That's like pulling out your private part and pressing it against his wife's jeans in the street. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? All right, look. I understand people expose themselves when drunk in Russia, but you don't touch wife's pants with private part. You get killed for this. It's the equivalent of, what are you parking against the guy's bumper for? It's bad enough to be in the driveway, but if you're going to park there, you don't put it on the guy's bumper. It was like a new car and little, and it looks like the guy worked all his life for his first new car, and to him, this was like a sexual encounter. It's like, all right, in my country, I know they get drunk and they pull it out, but they don't touch wife's pants. It was like on that level of insanity, the guy parked against his car. So I said, get out of here. And he's out of the car telling the guy, I want to see you smile. I figure a relative is going to come out and say, what you say to my uncle? Smile? In Russia, the worst insult, tell me how to smile when he's angry. I mean, to me, it looked like it was going to blow up into World War III. So I said to him, get in the car and get out of here. No, not here. So again, telling the guy that he didn't mean it and he wants him to smile. So I said to him, and the guy's screaming, I don't understand America. American people, stupid. Stupid American people. So I said to him, I looked him in the eye and I said, but you like America, don't you? See, I knew how to turn the situation because I know in Russia, a little bit about the Russian mind, which is that you can hate the person, but if you're a guest in another person's country, you don't hate the country because in his country, you get killed for hating someone else's country or your own country. I mean, he knows from his own reversal that through history, if you say you hated Poland and there's a Polish man in the street drunk, he'll kill you. You see, after they, I hate you, but I like Poland. It's a strange kind of Slavic sense of humor that you have to understand how to defuse these things. He's stupid, friend, no brain. I hate Americans, stupid, don't understand them, but I love America. So it was like that kind of thing. Finally, it ended. So naturally, I'm never going to go back to that restaurant. That's all. You have to have been there. What I should have done is tape recorded this one. This would have been a beauty to have on tape recording. All right, let's move on. Play the clip.
Fight? I don't think it's a word in his vocabulary. He pledged as a candidate to make the Bush tax cuts for people over $250,000 a year expire. He said that repeatedly as president. Then the Republicans telegraphed to him that they were going to use a fake crisis over the debt limit in order to muscle some major spending reductions or other things.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians? AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens, Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. If you want to make an omelet, you have to be willing to break a few eggs. It was Lenin who said it, not Marx. And it came about when one of Lenin's fellow Bolsheviks asked him to justify the growing number of atrocities they were committing in the name of a socialist future. Then Lenin said, oh, well, if you want to make an omelet, you have to be willing to break a few eggs. My suspicion is that as a pan-Leninist, Mr. Obama is willing to break a few eggs to make the new omelet called the New World Order in the name of a socialist revolution. I'm going to quote somebody right now. Class struggle, he wrote, class struggle. Classes struggle, some classes triumph, others are eliminated. Such is history, such is the history of civilization for thousands of years. Chairman Mao Tse-tung. Here's another quote from Chairman Mao, a favorite of the hippie generation. Changes in society are due chiefly to the development of the internal contradictions in society. That is the contradiction between the productive forces and the relations of production, the contradiction between classes and the contradiction between the old and the new. It is the development of these contradictions that pushes society forward and gives the impetus for the supersession of the old society by the new. In every in class society, everyone lives as a member of a particular class, and every kind of thinking without exception is stamped with the brand of a class. This is all out of quotations from Chairman Mao Tse-tung. You're watching nothing less than a revolution occurring, but instead of occurring over a period of weeks or months, it happened virtually overnight with a little help from the American media. Savage.